the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell, Sam Robson and Johnny Nicol with you. Sam, we've got three more fascinating teams to preview this evening in part 2B of our previews.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I've just about calmed down after speaking about Daikyo and Massa in the last recording, but yeah, ready to get going. And there's some stupid things to talk about in some of these teams as well.
Yeah, never a dull moment. And yeah, Johnny, great to have you back on another episode, of course. And yeah, can't wait to sink our teeth into these three clubs.
Yeah, I think we've made the right choice because we had a lot of good chat about Kashima and Urawa last night. And each of these three teams tonight is more than deserving of our focus, and they've got a lot of questions from the patrons to get through, a lot to talk about. So yeah, we should get to it. Are you feeling any better than last night?
Yes, much better. Thank you, Johnny. I'm sure all the listeners are terribly worried, but much better today. So thank you very much. Yeah, fit and raring to go. So something might break in the European transfer window while we're recording this, but you'll know what's happened by the time that window has slammed shut, listeners. So we'll just crack on with our three previews on this episode, beginning with Sapporo. Firstly, to quickly wrap up their 2022 season, of course, Consadole now well established in the top flight. Their sixth straight season in J1 in 2022 saw them finish 10th, the same position as in 2021. They only lost one game of their first 12, but drew 8 of those. And in total, they only spent 4 weeks in the top half of the table and never got higher than 8th. A poor run in mid-season saw them win only 1 in 9. And as they slipped to 14th, we began to wonder if they might be sinking into the dogfight. But they steadied somewhat and played some barn burners towards the end of the season, putting the final nail in Shimizu's coffin on the final day of the season, winning a cracker 4-3 up at the Dome. And games like those are why you don't mind getting up so early on Saturday morning's UK time to watch them, Sam.
No, I don't. I absolutely love Sapporo. They're great for that. And they always, they're the early kickoff more often than not. And last season was just more of the same from them. It was an absolutely wild rollercoaster of a season, as it is under Misha Petrovic. They had 6-1 defeat to Reysol, 5-0 to Tosu, 5-2 to Kawasaki. But then they go and beat Shonan 5-1 away from home, the 4-3 you mentioned against my beloved Shimizu, and 4-3 against Frontale. So, just goals are guaranteed with this team. Some will argue that with Misha Petrovic there, they're not able to take that next step and be a more consistent top half team, because no issues, there's no looking at defence at all. They are happy to concede goals and just keep going out and attack. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm delighted he's here for another season, and I look forward to more insane moments in Consadole games.
I think they're pretty much guaranteed, aren't they? But, Johnny, at the end of the day, they simply just treaded water, didn't they? I suppose for a club of Consadole's size, that might be considered a pass mark, finishing 10th. But, they're only a few years removed from finishing 4th. And, on the evidence of the last couple of seasons, it's kind of hard to see them reaching that sort of height again.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as Sam mentioned, that 1 week Consadole can beat someone 5-0 and the next week they can lose 6-1. There's just no consistency in a game-by-game basis. But if you look, since they came back into J1 in 2017, 5 of the 6 seasons they finished between 10th and 12th, and they finished 10th 3 times. So, I mean, that's as consistent and solidly a mid-table team as you can find. And I think we had a couple of questions about Misha Petrovic. It seems like it's like, this is about the third year, at least in a row, where you say, is this his last year? Is he due to move on? And, I think, as you mentioned there, I think the people running Consadole are probably quite happy with, not happy, but I think that they're content with the results. Because if you look at Consadole's history, they're, at best a yo-yo team, or a team that were mostly in J2 for a lot of their history, that sometimes came up to J1 and didn't do particularly well. But Petrovic has established them as a mid-table side. I mean, if you're looking at kind of kicking on to go further up the league, I mean, I would say if you're probably the only time Misha Petrovic will ever be compared to Massimo Ficcadenti or Lotina. But if you look at teams like Nagoya and Cerezo, who made changes to management not really based on results or league placings, more on strategy and formation and things like that. I mean, Petrovic would be removed based on his tactics, basically, wouldn't he, rather than the results. So I think if you're going to do that, you need to A, have a good plan in place to replace him, which neither of those teams, Cerezo or Nagoya, really did. And B, I think you've got to take into account, if you're charging a new manager with coming in and changing the playing style and getting better results, that's a very difficult thing to do, both of those two things at the same time. So you're looking more at taking a step back to take two steps forward. And do the people calling for Petrovic to step down, do they have the patience for him for the new manager to come in and take a bit of time to get things right? So, yeah, like Sam says, I'm not a Sapporo fan, but I love having Petrovic in the league. I love watching his teams. I was lucky enough to see Gamba play against them at home last year, and so the full range of Sapporo. And I really like Daiki Suga. I mean, just seeing him in the flesh, I think he's got to be possibly the fastest player on the ball in J1. He was really good in Kaneko as well. I really like. So, you know, I enjoy watching Sapporo as a neutral. And Sam, I know you've kind of just talked about them there, but with Petrovic, do you see him staying it for the long term, or what do you see happening to him?
Yeah, as long as they stay in that midfield, I think, as you say, I think the back room, they're quite happy with that. They've established themselves as a solid J1 team. Solid is absolutely not the right word with support, but you know what I mean, in terms of their position. So, yeah, I think they're quite happy. And it's always, when you get in this mid-table position, as long as the fans are getting a really exciting brand of football, which I think helps, and I think it gives a leeway to certain teams. I think if they were in this position but playing plodding, Ficodenti style football, I think there'd be more of a call to move him on. But I think there's quite a satisfaction in the way that you're always going to be entertained if you're a Sapporo supporter, and they're going to pretty much be guaranteed J1 football with Petrovic in charge. So I hope at least that there's no real designs on moving away from him. But I can see the other side of it, where they did get that fourth place and they haven't kicked on from that. They haven't got close before. But Ben, do you think that was maybe a false dawn for Sapporo? Do you think it was just giving them a false expectation, Sapporo supporters, that they should be up there more regularly? Or do you think they are right to think maybe that we should be aiming higher and maybe more of an ACL competitor than just treading water in mid-table?
Well, I mean, plenty of teams catch lightning in a bottle in a season in J1, don't they, Sam? And yeah, I think that was just Sapporo's time. I mean, I don't think they've ever had the sort of squad that would, you know, many people would expect to finish in the range of fourth or even sixth. So, I think that was just one magical season that was like a bolt out of the blue. And, since then, they've obviously found replicating that sort of success really difficult. And, yeah, I wonder what the ceiling is for this club. I certainly don't think it's higher than fourth. But, yeah, as the squad as it's currently constructed, yeah, I don't see them threatening any sort of a position like that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to they just leave Misha Petrovic to his own devices, and he's he certainly delivers a really entertaining brand of football that keeps the punters up at the Sapporo Dome entertained, and yeah, keeps a very groggy and sleepy Sam entertained on his very early Saturday mornings over in the UK. So, we'll touch on the transfers out and in to the club now over the winter. A couple of, mainstays from last season, I would say, have departed. And, Tomoki Takamine has been, almost ever present for the last two seasons. He made 26 appearances last year and a full 38 in the 20-team J1 in 2021, while Gabriel Xavier's stay at the Dome only lasted one season, and he was released after also making 26 appearances last year and scoring three goals. Well, they decided against bringing Yuto Iwasaki back to the club, or maybe the player himself wanted to stay with Tosu, and his loan down there was turned into a permanent deal. So, yeah, Takamine, we're obviously going to come on to discuss Kashiwa Reysol later on in the episode, Johnny. That is the club that Takamine has moved to, and he could slot straight in to a central midfield role with Reysol. So, he's one that I was slightly surprised to see leave. And also Xavier, obviously a big entertainer in his time with Nagoya, and I think expectations were pretty high when he moved up to Sapporo. So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see him released as well.
Yeah, I think the Takamine, I wasn't surprised to see him leave. But what I was surprised was his destination, which we'll come on to later. with the greatest respect to Kashua, they only finished three positions above Sapporo last year. Are they guaranteed to finish above Sapporo this year, even with Takamine moving? That remains to be seen. So I thought he might have gone up to, like, you know, like an Urawa or a Kashima even. And he is, like, he's a born and bred Sapporo guy. He came through the youth system before going to university, and he put out quite a kind of passionate message to the fans about why he'd left. And he said he felt like he had to challenge himself in a new environment because he wanted to become an international footballer. Again, I'll leave you up to your own judgment whether his destination is the right place to do that. I think Gabriel Xavier, yeah, he kind of flattered to deceive. And I was a little bit worried when he joined. On one hand, it did look like it was going to be an exciting move. But on the other hand, he had been kind of out of favour in Nagoya for a couple of seasons. He hadn't really played regularly. So I think that may have kind of taken a bit of his match sharpness away. And then, yeah, you mentioned Iwasaki joining Tosa on a permanent deal. Yeah, I think it's kind of disappointing if you're a Sapporo fan to see him doing so well at Tosa. And then he didn't really do anything when he was in Sapporo. So I guess it's a kind of case of wasted talent. But not too many. I think apart from Takamine, there's not too much going out of that first 11. So if the base is 10th, then they haven't lost too much away from that bit before adding on new talent. So how about Sam? Would you add anything to that?
Yeah, the only other one I'd add would be Shinzo Kuroki going back to Reds after his loan spell. They couldn't convince him to stay. And it wasn't like he was scoring too many goals either, but it's another striker that's gone, and they've really lacking in that position. Kim Gun-hee came in at the back end of last season, didn't really show too much. And then Ogashiwa's the other one who's played there fairly regularly, but he's so injury prone. I think he's injured at the moment throughout pre-season. So besides that, you look at then Nakashima is only 20, looked good in the Levain Cup, but the options are quite limited there. And far too often, I thought last season, Sapporo had to resort to playing midfielders as strikers. And I mean, it doesn't necessarily stop them scoring goals, but I think that sort of focal point would really be quite useful to them. You saw how well they did with Jay Bothroyd for a while in that position. So I think that's maybe where they are lacking. But otherwise, yeah, I don't think it's major losses. Xavier had a fairly reasonable end to the season, but generally, yeah, flattered to deceive. I think Ficadenti had sucked all life out of him in previous times at Nagoya, and he was, yeah, never really able to replicate his best form. But otherwise, yeah, Takamine, a decent loss, but they've got so many players that play in that role as well, and they've replaced fairly well. So, yeah, I don't think any of the outs are a major concern.
Yeah, well, it looks like they've brought in a ready-made replacement for Takamine in Yuki Kobayashi, not the Celtic one, from Kobe. So, yeah, Johnny, in your depth chart that the patrons will be able to check out underneath this this podcast post, yeah, you've got Kobayashi slotted straight in to central midfield. So, yeah, it looks like a ready-made replacement for Takamine.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because the two midfielders you'll see below him, Fukai and Komai, they're both out with injuries. I believe Komai's is the more serious, which is, well, we're talking about losses there. In a sense, he's going to miss a good chunk of the season, I think. So that's kind of a loss. Yeah, Yuki Kobayashi, the midfielder, when he first went to Vissel, I thought he was a bit of a step down from Hashimoto, who had just left. But he, to his credit, he once he got up and running towards the back end of the season, he got a few goals. He looked pretty lively, and I think, yeah, he'll be one of the main. I'd imagine he'd be the main midfielder, and the others like Arano and Miyazawa. Miyazawa's getting on a bit. He's probably not going to play as much now. So I'd imagine Kobayashi to be the main kind of linchpin in the midfield. And then, if I can slightly stand on your toes, because you're going to go on to other ends, I think Seiya Baba, he was nominally a defender for like Japan under 21s, but he can also play in that midfield role. He can also play out wide. So I think he fits in very well with what Petrovic wants to do. As he, you know, Sam mentioned, having midfielders up front. He also has defenders in midfield, midfielders in defence. So if you can play a number of positions, you're perfect for Sapporo.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, Bubba's a really interesting one. Yeah, just 21. He comes in from Tokyo Verde, and as Johnny said, very versatile. Right at the back, Sam, it's going to be interesting to see who wins the battle to be the number one goalkeeper, as, of course, Takanori Sugano did so well last season, and indeed the last couple of seasons between the sticks for Sapporo. But Gu Sung Yun has returned to the club, the 195-centimetre South Korean international is back. Yeah, after three seasons away, he started the first game of the 2020 season, but then left during the COVID shutdown, and he's returned to South Korea. He's done his military service, and after that's concluded, he's come back to Sapporo. So yeah, it's an interesting battle, I suppose, in preseason, but I would expect Gu to win out. What sort of an impact can he have in strengthening Petrovic's defense, which is often so exposed, of course?
Yeah, well, he's going to be busy, as Sugano has been for a couple of years now. But Gu's used to this. He knows the system that Petrovic plays. He knows that he's going to be worked hard. But yeah, he's a terrific goalkeeper. I think his positioning is really good. He can take up a higher position maybe than Sugano can in terms of outside the area to sweep up behind that defence, and just a generally very good shot stopper. He's gone back to Korea, as you said. He did his military duty. He played pretty much every game for Gimcheon Sangmu there. He's in and around the Korean national team. I think he's a step up on Sugano, and that's no disrespect to him, who I think has played really well. And it's another one of those situations, like we've got at Gamba and like we've got at Urawa, where the veteran goalkeeper might be moved out, and it's be harsh on that goalkeeper who's played very well. But I think in Gu, you've got a goalkeeper absolutely in his prime, and I think he's going to be vital to limiting the goals that Sapporo concede, because yeah, they're always he's going to come under a lot of pressure. But he's shown in the past for Sapporo, and then wherever he's been in Korea, that yeah, he's a very good goalkeeper, a bit more of a sweeper type. So I think it's pretty vital there, and it's going to be probably a young, maybe an experienced defence, especially if Baba's back there. I know Toya Nakamura got a few games towards the end of last season. He might play a more prominent role, with Fukumori kind of being dropped out of contention a little bit. So he's got a big job on his hands, but I think he's the perfect goalkeeper for it.
Indeed. All right. So, yeah, we mentioned Gu. We mentioned Baba at the back. Of course, Baba can operate in midfield as well. Kobayashi, we've mentioned. Yuya Asano arrives from Hiroshima. And the assist machine off the bench, Superchok Sarachat's loan from Buriram in his native Thailand, was turned into a permanent deal, which no doubt brought great joy to the J-League's social media team. But it'll be interesting, Johnny, if more responsibility is placed on Superchok's shoulders in his first full season up in Sapporo. I mean, the flashes were, admittedly impressive. And as I said, he did have a few assists to his name by the end of the season. So, as I say, it'll be interesting if he's utilised a little bit more, maybe from the start of some games by Petrovic this year.
Yeah, I agree. He looked very good at any time I saw him, with his sort of like 15, 20, 25-minute cameos and picking up a few good assists. He seemed to get up to speed quite quickly with the way the team wanted to play and sort of connecting with his teammates. And it is good that there are a few players around that position, like Aoki, I think, ended up in the top scorer for Sapporo last season. Kaneko, you can even drop Ogashiwa in there in behind. So they don't have to play him from the start every week if there's potential issues about how he deals with like physicality or things like that. Because he looked at the one area he might kind of struggle to get pushed off the ball a little bit. But his skill set and vision was excellent. So I think he's someone that possibly by the midway point of the season towards the back end, you're quite possibly seeing starting every week. And yeah, if he keeps up his assist ratio, he'll be a very good addition, not only for the J-League media team, but also for Sapporo, I think.
Absolutely. And yeah, so Kevin asked, will Superchok be able to establish himself in J1? Sam, we can only believe that Sapporo thinks that he will, because they've, as I said, they've taken him on a permanent basis. So I don't think this is just a signing to sell shirts. I mean, as Johnny said, he was impressive in his cameos, and with a full Petrovic preseason under his belt, yeah, I'm sure he'll be he'll feature much more prominently this year.
Yeah, I think so, because it's so difficult to come in the middle of a season and to make an impact. And he did so with his time off the bench, and it looks like he's been heavily involved in pre-season. He's got a few kind of competitors in that position, as Johnny mentioned, Aoki, Kaneko, Asano also brought in that position. So, yeah, I don't think he's necessarily guaranteed to start every game, but, yeah, he'll be given a prominent role in this position, and Petrovic has already shown that he's willing to put him in. And, yeah, he's looked really good. I thought a lot of his combination play last season was very good, so I expect to see him play pretty often, more regularly than not. And, yeah, he looks a really exciting player and fits into the mould of Sapporo pretty almost perfectly.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Kai thinks that Sapporo could be the most exciting team in J1 this season, and he's suggesting that we give Yuki Kobayashi a nickname to help the poor Celtic fans who are perhaps bombarding him on social media. So did you guys, have a think about this? Obviously, I sent you these questions beforehand. So anything come to mind in terms of a nickname for Yuki Kobayashi?
Y2K is what I came up with.
I've got nothing that will beat that, so I'll jump on the bandwagon.
All right, yeah, well, if he's wearing shirt number 99, I was wondering whether we could come up with something like that, but I don't think I could beat that either. So we'll wait and see if Kai gives that the seal of approval, but I think that's the leader in the clubhouse. And Kai also mentions Sayababa, who will bring some entertainment to the Sapporo Dome, no question. So Misha Petrovic, well, we've already talked about him quite a bit already. He begins his sixth year in charge at the Sapporo Dome. It's never a dull moment under him, of course. So, we've talked about the new signings. Basically, do they appear handpicked for his system, Sam, or do you think any of them might kind of struggle to fit in and maybe get up to speed with things, or do they all kind of seem like they might fit in fairly seamlessly?
Yeah, I think they all fit in seamlessly. They're all these kind of sort of hybrid players that can play in a couple of positions, as we mentioned with Baba playing either centre back or midfield. You can play Kobayashi either deeper, or I think he's a little bit better when he's allowed a license forward, and that the system really allows that. Sapporo, Asano, again, one of those players in those two shadow positions behind the striker. I think they all fit absolutely perfectly. The only issue I have is maybe a lack of out-and-out striker, but maybe it's time for Kim Gunhee to really stamp his authority on that position.
All right. And, yeah, Chris wonders if Petrovic will ever change his tactics at all, or will he continue with the entertaining, outscore the opposition approach to defending? Well, Chris, as Sam certainly hopes that Petrovic doesn't change his spots at all. And yeah, Chris wonders himself if he can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think by this stage of proceedings, Johnny, we can pretty much take it as read that this is what Mitja Petrovic is going to serve up on a year-by-year basis.
Yeah, I think Chris's question might be the easiest question that's answered in all of these previews. He's not going to change. We know how he's going to play. The opposition knows how he's going to play, and it's going to be entertaining. But I just wanted to say, because Chris, I think, in his message said some quite nice things about my depth chart. So that, thank you very much, Chris. And also thank you for your question about Sapporo, because I think that they're a team that didn't get as many questions maybe as some of the big Kanto teams. And just, I know this is slightly off topic from the question, but the answer is yes, he's going to keep going the same way as he does. But one player we actually haven't mentioned is coming from Juntendo University, Shingo Omori, who's a young forward. And I know you got me last week, Ben, with Genki Omai's penalty against Gamba, but he played up front for Juntendo in a game that I think FC Tokyo fans might want to forget in the Emperor's Cup. And he's another one of these kind of hybrid centre forward, like shadow forwards. And like we mentioned Takamine earlier, Kaneko, Shunta Tanaka, Ogashiwa, they've all come in to support him from university and really, really bolstered their team. But last year they didn't get anything. I think Igawa and Hiromu Tanaka just didn't play at all. So if they can get some kind of bang from their buck for Omori, I think that adds another element to their attack and gives them some real options up there. I know that wasn't really what was asked, but I just thought I'd go off there.
No, fair enough. Very good point, Johnny, but don't be surprised if it ends up on the cutting room floor. But no, only joking. And yeah, Chris, thanks for your question and your kind words about Johnny's depth chart. Graham Fritsche, asks about Misha, and is it time to move on? Well, not quite yet, I don't think, Graham Fritsche. We'll give him another year or two at least. The entertainment value is well and truly worth it. Okay, so before we wrap up Sapporo and maybe get some final thoughts on how we think they'll fare in an area of the table kind of perspective. Ones to watch. I think you've both gone for forward players, and we'll wait and see how both of these guys fare. But Sam, you can go first. Who's yours?
Yeah, mine is Taika Nakashima. I thought Levain Cup, especially last season, I thought it was fantastic. He's got a more physical profile. He was very good in the air, but also, yeah, just really held up play. I think he would be perfect for the system, but he wasn't given enough game time, I don't think, in the second half of the season. So with Ogashiwa's injuries, with Kuroki leaving, there aren't many options there. I'm hoping that he gets a little bit more game time this season and really grows into that role. He's still only 20, so there's plenty more to come for him. So yeah, he's the one I'm most interested in seeing how they progress this season. Johnny, who was it that you went with?
Well, I actually went for one of Nakashima's rivals for first team football. It was Kim Gun-hee, who I believe came in about a similar time as Super Chalk last season. And again, he didn't start any J1 games, but I think he got two goals and two assists in eight sub appearances. He looked like the kind of player that Sapporo would have targeted for his size and physicality, but he also looked quite mobile and a very good finish on him. I remember the game last year, they drew 0-0 away with Yokohama F. Marinos in the least predictable 0-0 imaginable. And for some reason, they didn't bring him on off the bench, which is even more unfathomable. He looked a pretty good player. And I think over the course of a season, you know, they relied on Aoki, I think was top scorer, about seven goals. He looks like someone that can maybe push on, get 8, 9, 10 goals and maybe be the kind of forward that they play around. And I think with him, if he gets the goals, then maybe they could push on to like eighth or like in the top half or something. But, you know, that tenth has been the kind of area they've kind of been around. So it's hard to predict him anywhere else than that. And maybe one thing we haven't actually mentioned is the Nippon Ham Fighters have moved to a new stadium this year. So basically, Sapporo don't have anything crazy with their fixture list this year, like four away games in a row or multiple home games. So it'll be interesting to see if any effect that plays, that they've basically got the same sort of set of fixtures as everyone else. But yeah, I have to be boring and go mid-table. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I would think, yeah, probably between 8th and 12th, and it's probably going to be 10th again, isn't it? So, yeah, I guess at this stage they would take that. As I said earlier, I don't think the ceiling of this current squad is really top six. So, yeah, I would say 7th or 8th is probably the highest they could finish. And I think they're probably going to be good enough to stay out of any sort of a dogfight with obviously only one team getting relegated this year. So, mid-table, well, it's not mediocrity because it's never a dull moment. But, yeah, I would expect another season in mid-table. Sam, you can have the last word on Sapporo. What are your expectations for them on a general basis this year?
Yeah, Johnny said before they finish always between 10th and 12th, and I have them 11th. But I don't see them being good enough or consistent enough to really feature top six or anything like that. But they've always got enough about them to stay clear of relegation, especially with only one place this season. So, yeah, I think and more of the same from Sapporo in every single way.
All right, then. So we'll take a very short break and we'll return to chat about one of the promoted teams, Albert X Niigata. Okay, welcome back. Niigata were promoted as J2 champions. They finished 4 points ahead of Yokohama FC with the best attack and the joint best defence in terms of goals scored and conceded in the second tier. Having been a previous top flight staple for 14 straight years from 2004 to 2017, they return to J1 after five seasons in J2. 12 teams had a double-digit scorer in J2 last season, but Albert X did not. They were led by the trio of Kaito Taniguchi, Ryotaro Ito, and Yoshiaki Takagi, who all scored 9 and all return this season. Johnny, they were worthy champions in the end, and it's great to have them back in the top flight.
Yeah, I think I think last season we were talking about with Kyoto and Jubilo coming back up. It was like getting the band back together, and there's very much that feel with Niigata, as you say, a worthy champion, best defence, best attack, and the attack it was all shared out. And I think that really, you mentioned the three top scorers with 9 goals. That sums them up. They've got, you know, what, one central attacker and then 3 behind, and that's really where all the depth and lies, that you can switch those players around very easily. They lost Shion Homma midway through last season, didn't skip a beat. You've got young Mito, he missed a bit of time with injury, again didn't skip a beat. They lost Takagi to a serious injury at the end of the season, didn't skip a beat. They've got players to come in there, create the chances. And, you know, obviously, Albert Pudgy is now at FC Tokyo, and he was replaced. Rikuzo Matsuhashi came in last season, had worked with Albert. He'd worked with Ange Postecoglou at Marinos, and he really added a clinical edge to them, because I think under Albert, he almost gave them the attackers too much freedom to decide what they were going to do. And then I remember watching the first game of last season, Niigata. They drew 0-0 away with Vegalta Sendai, and Matsuhashi had them set up in a 4-3-3, and they battered Sendai, battered them, but they couldn't score. It was 0-0. So I thought, is this going to be more of the previous year? But he's obviously looked at things, and he's managed to get these young players. They can't play consistently over the whole season, but he rotated them very well. He had them playing in a system where they could all kind of fit in, fit out, and it didn't really seem to affect the team. And, you know, they never really threatened to blow anyone away last season, but they were just consistently better than everyone, but by just enough. And yeah, I really like their kit. I'm a big fan of their kit. I like their stadium. I like having Niigata back in J1, so I'm looking forward to seeing them this season.
Yeah, Sam, they're not a big club in the J-League by any means, but as I said, they were in the top flight for so long, we just got used to having them around. And it's great to have them back after, I guess they were kind of in danger of getting sucked down into a kind of a Jeff Chiba vortex of mediocrity, of just being stuck down in J2. So the fact that they were able to build on the sixth place finish in 2021 and go all the way and finish first the following season, does that augur well, do you think, for what's to come back up in J1?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, I'm delighted they haven't fallen into it, become a Jeff United. Nobody wants to be that, and I don't think the J2 boys could deal with another Jeff United down there either. So, but I really like this squad that they've assembled. It's kind of, you've got those young players, but you've got that element of experience as well, especially in defence. And Michael James, great to have him back. He was a mainstay back in J1, so he's back, and Chiba at the centre back as well. So it's a nice experienced foundation they've got, and they look to have built on the work that Pucci did very well. I really like the look of Takahiro Ko and Ryotaro Ito in midfield. Both players had a lot of promise coming up, and it's nice to see them flourishing now in the system at Niigata. It's a really nicely built squad. Kojima is another one I want to look at in goal. I've obviously not seen too much of Niigata while they've been down in J2, but he was an interesting goalkeeper who went with Japan to the Copa America in 2019, and then a couple of injuries sort of slowed his progress down a little bit, but by all means he was fantastic last season. So another one I'm looking forward to seeing. And so it just looks a really nice squad, and I like what they've done in the off season as well. They haven't made major changes. They are putting faith in the team that brought them up, which not every team does. And when we get onto Yokohama FC in a couple of weeks, they've gone the complete opposite route. But I like the consistency that's built there. Everyone will buy into the way that they're playing, and I expect them to have a really good season. I'm looking forward to them, and I'm looking forward to their supporters being back, because they were always some of the highlights of our J-League weekends.
Yeah, very well said, Sam. All right, so to the outs, Johnny, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't appear they've lost anyone especially significant from their promotion campaign. Ippei Shinozuka and Alexander Guedes made 25 appearances and 12 starts between them, and I guess they probably qualify as the biggest names, in inverted commas, that they've lost. And, I mean, of those 12 starts, most of them were for Shinozuka in the first half of the season. You pointed that out in your predicted lineups piece as well, didn't you? So, it looks like, as Sam says, they're sticking fat with the squad that got them promoted pretty much.
Yeah, it's interesting that Shinozuka and Guedes, because they were the two kind of, you could say, big names in J2 terms. And Shinozuka got injured, which I think has been his problem for the last couple of years. I think a shoulder injury, and he was only on loan from Kashiwa, and I believe it's still not been announced what's going to happen. I know there was rumours about going to Omiya, but it's still to be confirmed. And Guedes, I think he was with Sendai in J1, and he looked like he should have been a decent striker for them, and he just didn't really play. So he's gone as well. And I think the other player I wrote down was Ken Yamura, who's a young forward who I remember scoring a brilliant overhead kick. It might be the winner against someone, but he just hasn't really kicked on. So in terms of the 11 or the sort of 14 or 15 that played most of their games last season, none of those players fitted into that. So, yeah, no real loss, to be honest.
Right. So, Sam, you said you like the look of the squad. And I guess if for recent precedent, that rhymes. I guess OITA 2019 is an example that came to my mind straight off the bat of a team that came up, kind of stuck with the same team and did well. OITA, of course, spent loads of time in, especially the first half of the season, up in the top four in 2019 before ultimately deciding that they didn't want to be in with a sniff of playing in the ACL, and they were quite happy to slip down a little bit and finish ninth at the end of 2019. But I don't know, is that kind of the best case scenario you can see for Niigata? Because I can see what they're doing, and I mean, it's good to reward the players that got you up by, you know, keeping faith with them in J1. But I wonder if they might have done a couple more J1 level signings to maybe solidify the squad. I mean, they've kept Eitaro Matsuda on his loan from Yokohama F. Marinos has been extended. And I don't know, maybe you can tell us something about their new Brazilian arrivals, Danilo Gomez and Gustavo Nescau, but don't appear to have resumes that jump off the page. But I guess they might have seen something in those two Brazilians.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's stereotypical, I think, you have to say about Niigata, but they generally get their foreign signings right. They've always done in the past, or at least the ones that I can remember. Maybe that's the reason I can't remember the ones that did fail. But yeah, Danilo Gomez, I think, is the better of the two. He played for Ponte Preta in Serie B in Brazil. But again, he struggled with injuries for a large part of last season, but so that's a slight concern. But he looks a decent pedigree, plays on either wing, can play in behind the striker as well, so I think that's going to be vital, especially with Yoshiaki Takagi still out with injury. I think he underwent surgery at the end of September, and I think he's going to miss a large part of this season, so they need him to step up. Gustavo Nescau is a young player, didn't really get much time at Cuiabá, I think it is, in Brazil. Not expecting a great deal from him straight away. So, yeah, you could argue maybe they want a little bit more of J1 know-how. And they've got it to a degree in some of their defenders, in terms of James Chiba, Jorge Gomez there as well. But otherwise, maybe that is an area they're lacking. I don't expect them to necessarily go as high as OITA were doing in terms of fourth, but I do expect them to catch teams out, especially at the start of the season, get themselves into a pretty decent mid-table position, probably then fade away a little bit. But I think there's still enough about them to keep their heads above water for this season. And maybe they were influenced by just that one relegation spot and thought, we can maybe grow this team into J1 and then build next season. It's maybe a little bit of a risk, but if you're going to do that risk in any season, I think this is the one to do it in.
All right, yeah, you mentioned their history with getting Brazilian signings right, and Grant Freche pointed that out as well. So, yeah, we'll wait and see what Danilo and Gustavo deliver. And, I mean, that's a terrific point, isn't it, Johnny, about the one relegation spot? And there was a question from Daniel on that as well, and that's a really interesting one, and one that, yeah, I hope, his question leads Niigata down this path. Daniel says, with only one team going down, does Niigata have a bit more opportunity to play adventurously rather than the often safe style played by many newly promoted teams? From what you've seen from Matsuhashi in his one season in charge of Niigata, would you expect that from him anyway?
I think Matsuhashi's come across as a very wily coach, who I think he'll take into account the opposition. You're never going to put Niigata in the same camp as a Sapporo or just a gung-ho attacking team, even if they do have those kind of exciting players that, like, just playing off the main striker. But they're probably not going to sit in camp back, like, in defence, just like parking the bus against too many teams. So I think you'll probably see, yeah, he'll play the field. He'll see who he's up against before, like, fully deciding his tactics. Yeah, I think that they'll obviously have less of the ball than they did last season, so they're going to have to defend a bit more. And, you know, I think Sam's been pretty positive about them. I'm fairly positive about them, as in not finishing bottom, but maybe not quite as positive as Sam. I think my two issues are maybe centre forward and centre back, not necessarily the starters, but you mentioned Taniguchi had a very good 2021, and then he kind of faded away the second half of last season. And then you've got, Sam mentioned, Nescau, who looks like he's been signed because he's Brazilian and tall. And they've got Koji Suzuki, who's never really done much in J1. So if you get an injury there, like, Where's the what's happening with the centre forward? Similarly, at the back, you've got Thomas Deng's there. He's played 10 league games in 2 years. And Chiban Michael James, yeah, very good in names, but they're both like, you know, 35, 36. So outside of that, you've got like Tagami and Arai who can play there, but are also kind of fullback. So, you know, an injury or two in key areas, I think, could derail them quite badly, because it's a good squad of about 15 or 16, but it takes a couple of hits in there. I think it could sink quite badly. I'm not expecting them to go down, but yeah, I'm not really expecting them to be in the top half either, to be honest.
All right. Well, yeah, it's we haven't seen them in the top flight for obviously a number of years. So it'll be really interesting to see how they go from the off and, how they last throughout the season. Well, Sam, Johnny's just mentioned Thomas Deng there. And Kevin had a question earlier about Superchoc. He's also got one on Thomas Deng and wondering if he'll be able to establish himself in J1. Obviously, he was disappointed to leave Urawa and now has fronted up at Niigata and played his small role in getting them promoted. But, yeah, do you think he'll feature a bit more prominently this year? Johnny said, Michael James and Chiba are both getting on.
Yeah, I really hope so. But it all depends on his injuries ever since pretty much going down to J2. Well, at that time at Reds where he was injured for a long while, it's carried on at Niigata. But the good thing was he came back at the end of last season and he managed to get into the Australia national team for the World Cup, which was a great moment for him. So hopefully, he gets through pre-season. And then, as long as he can stay fit, I think he'll be a mainstay in that back line. And I really want him to do well because he's a former J-Talk Goal of the Season winner. So, looking forward to seeing a lot more of that this season.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. So Chris's question, well, it pretty much could have been written by me. Chris says, for someone who didn't follow J2 much at all last year, and me myself, I didn't either, apart from listening to J-Talk Extra Time, what can we expect to see from this side? The J-League website boasts a high number of assists from crosses and the most passes per game for a J2 side. Is there any reason why they can't continue to play that way in J1? I guess, Johnny, it's just going to be more difficult for them to impose their will in games against, in inverted commas, better teams or teams that, you know, a bit more experienced at this level.
Yeah, I think if I was to broadly classify Niigata's squad, you've got a group of very young, very promising players, but they've never played in J1 before, so all of them stepping up at the same time and playing at a good level is unlikely. So you're probably going to have to rotate, or someone's going to play well and someone's not really going to make the grade. So how those young players do, like Mito, Komi, Akiyama, midfield players like that, that's going to be key. And then you have the next group up, you have players like Ito and Ko, who are kind of middle-aged for footballers, and they've played J1 previously, but they haven't quite made the grade at maybe one of the bigger teams, so they'll have the bit between their teeth. Can they make it count this time round? And then, as we mentioned earlier, you've got your veterans, you've got your Koji Suzuki's, you've got your Michael James, you've got your Chiba. How much do they still have in the tank? So you probably noticed I've asked a lot of questions there, that there's a lot of unknowns. That there is talent here. We know that. There's talent throughout this team. There's not a huge amount of depth. You know, they're one of these teams, I think, we're all quite confident supporter are going to be within about four or five positions. Niigata, you could make an argument for there being about 12, maybe not 12, something like that, over 9, 10, 11, 12 positions that they could realistically fit into, depending how it goes for them, how they start, how the injuries go, who leaves, who comes in mid-season. There's a lot of factors to be taken into account. So, it's, I know maybe people are wanting solid answers here, but I don't really have anything. This is a talented team, but how far they go really much is still up in the air.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, that's why we're here, to kind of thresh these things out. And, we can't come to concrete conclusions all the time about how we think things are going to go when, as you said, so many of these players are inexperienced at this level. But, well, the coaches as well, Sam. So it'll be really interesting to see how, yeah, he approaches things, as Johnny says, on a game-by-game basis. He'll obviously be doing his prep already, I'm sure, for the first few opponents on Niigata's docket. But, yeah, I guess for Rikuzo Matsuhashi, a huge feather in his cap. As we said, Niigata were in danger of slipping into the abyss in J2, but instead he was able to, as I said, build on Albert Puig's sixth place finish in 2021 and get them all the way to the summit. So, yeah, a lot of interesting players in this squad, but it'll really also be interesting to see how Matsuhashi goes in setting his team up and for us to see how prepared they are at this level.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to hear what Johnny says about him maybe being a little bit more pragmatic and in the way that he sets up. And I think that is absolutely what Niigata need to be. They can't go out and swashbuckle and try and play their way through every team, because they will be found out. You have to be a little bit cuter. And that is like the way that Kyoto managed to stay up with the manager, just being able to find kinks in other in opponents' armoury. And I think Niigata have the ability in the squad to take advantage of plenty of teams in this division. There are very poor defences throughout the league that I think the players can take advantage of, as long as they are a bit more resolute at the back, which it looks like they will be able to. Obviously a very good record last season. So yeah, I agree with a lot of what Johnny says. I'm sure one or two injuries could derail this team, but I just think that everything sounds like it's working the right direction. It sounds quite positive. It sounds like they have a good idea of how they're going to approach this season. So I really do expect them to do well, at least initially, and then kind of settle down towards lower mid-table. But yeah, I think they've got all the tools there to be well clear of that 18th position.
All right, good stuff. So, Johnny, I think it's your turn to go first. Who's your one to watch for Niigata in 2023?
Well, as Sam mentioned, they're going to have to be robust at the back. And the player I'm going to talk a bit more about is Ryusuke Kojima, the goalkeeper, which probably tells you, I think Niigata are going to have a bit more defending to do this year. And I'd actually forgotten, as Sam said, he was in the Copa America squad. I completely forgot about that. But I did know he was, at one time, he was a genuine, Tokyo 2020 candidate. He was up there with all the other names. And, he's not been a professional for that long, because he went to university and he's had two seasons wrecked by injury. But he was back last year. He was in J2 Team of the Year. It's one of these things, I think, because Niigata won the league. Good teams usually have good goalkeepers, but you don't always see the best of them. So I think you might actually see even better performances from Kojima this year when he's called upon more. If you look at someone like Kami Fukumoto at Kyoto, how he kept him in the league, I really see Kojima. He hasn't played in J1 yet, but I think once he gets up to speed, I think he's someone who might have a similar impact, but bailing them out when all else fails. So, yeah, I've gone for the goalkeeper, Ryosuke Kojima. What about Sam? Who did you go for?
Well, I've been really excited for this player to come into J1 for ages. I saw him, it was back in 2021. It was a game where Niigata beat Tokyo Verdy 7-0, and he only got about 8 minutes at the end. But Shunsuke Mito, I think he was 18 at the time, came off the bench, and he just looked absolutely incredible. I know at the time all the rave reviews, rightly so, were on Shion Honma, but this guy just seemed to have exactly the same qualities. So good on the ball, so intelligent, so quick with his movement, so confident at such a young age, and he has just gone on and become a mainstay in this team, and still only 20, and I expect him to grow and grow, and I really want to see him on the big stage in J1, and hopefully he's another one that takes the league by storm. Yeah, just seeing everything about him just seems so dynamic coming off. I think it was the left wing that day. He can play either side, can play in behind the striker. I think he's a really exciting prospect. And yeah, as if he goes the way I imagine him to go, I think he might be setting his sights at a higher J1 club by the end of the season.
All right. So yeah, two terrific young players there for, Niigata fans to enjoy, and for the rest of us to get to know, I guess, the rest of us J1 watchers who haven't seen Shunsuke Mito or Ryosuke Kojima that much before. So Niigata, a fascinating club and a fascinating season ahead for them as they return to J1. So we'll definitely be keeping a keen eye on them from the start of the season. All right, so we're two-thirds of the way through this part 2B of our J1 previews. After a quick hit of music, it's Kashiwa Reysol on the docket. And yes, to Kashima Reysol to finish off this episode. So firstly, on their 2022 season, and yeah, what a year it was for the Reysol faithful. So after a 15th placed finish in the 20-team J1 in 2021, in which they avoided automatic relegation by 5 points. Most observers expected Reysol to struggle mightily last season, but instead they got off to a flyer, winning 5 of their first 7. They reached the halfway point in fourth and were second as late as match day 24, though that round saw their last win of the season away at Kyoto, and a late swoon as they finished with 5 draws and 5 defeats meant they finished on a sour note, I suppose, but they had enough points in the bank to stay in the top 6 until match day 30, ultimately ending 7th. So we all had egg on their faces when it came on our faces when it came to Kashiwa last season. Sam, they exceeded everyone's expectations, and that's a massive understatement. I guess despite finishing so flatly, that shouldn't detract from what they did for, I mean, 2/3 of the season.
No, I don't think so. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I think 95% of people in their J-Preds had them in the relegation zone. So we all looked quite stupid. But yeah, especially midway through the season, I know we were very much debating between Nelsinho and Michael Skibber for manager of the half season. Did you win the argument or me? I can't quite remember. But Nelsinho was, yeah, fantastic when we'd all written him off as well at the end of the previous season. So they played incredibly well. I think Mateus Savio really came into his own last season, and did Mal Hosoya. So there were lots of positives for them. Yes, it tailed off towards the end, but they were so far ahead of where anyone expected them to be. I think we can forgive that as long as they don't then continue that slump into the start of this season. But yeah, they were really impressive. I can't say anything too negative about the way that they played. Yeah, completely made everybody look like fools.
And for the record, yeah, you guys outnumbered me, and Skibber did get the nod. But don't worry, guys. I don't hold it against you. But yeah, Johnny, it was just remarkable, wasn't it? I guess when they made that fast start, we all just expected reality to kick in and them to start sliding down, but they simply didn't. And obviously, you know which side of the argument I was on at mid-season, and Nelsinho just worked wonders there. And I guess he made diamonds out of some pretty rough-looking rocks there for a while. As we said, it did end in rather flat terms, but the whole season as a whole, I mean, there's no way that any sane-minded Reysol fan would have even been dreaming of 7th at the start of the year after 15th the year before that.
Well, yeah, speaking as one of the 5% who didn't put Kashiwa in the relegation zone, I still didn't expect them to be the top 6 for most of the year. And yeah, even towards the back end of the season, they'd obviously looked at it slightly down tools, but I think there was a few games they played where they drew, but they could have won. There was a couple of horrible results against FC Tokyo. They lost 6-3 at home. It thrashed away against Urawa. But across the whole season, finishing 15th the year before, I guess it is a bit of a roller coaster ride at Kashiwa, because I was looking through their previous finishes. Like 2017, they qualified for the ACL, then relegated 2018, back up as champions 2019, and it's been 7th, 15th, 7th. So I guess from that, all I can really read from those numbers is that they won't finish 7th again, and they'll probably not finish anywhere close to 7th, but whether they go up or go down, it remains to be seen. I know that they actually ended up conceding quite a few goals. The 10 in those two games I just mentioned wouldn't have helped, but statistics-wise, that the defence wasn't actually too bad. And I think I like Sasaki, the goalkeeper. He definitely passes the eye test. But in terms of stats, I know he's a young goalkeeper replacing an international keeper in Kim Sung-gyu. But, I did some kind of digging into stats in the goalkeepers. And the 20 goalkeepers last year played at least 10 games. And out of those, Kim Sung-gyu had the best stats in terms of goals conceded per game, whereas Sasaki was the worst. And Sasaki also had the lowest shot save percentage. So there's definitely something to... The defending was good in some ways last year, but another way is that they ended up conceding too many goals. So Nelsinho is an experienced and is a wily coach, and there have been quite a few changes, which we'll obviously talk about, and there's a bit to work on. But if he can kind of strike the magic again, there's no reason to believe that Kashiwa can't surprise everyone again, I think.
Well, yeah, that'll be music to the ears of Tokyo Fox. I think he's a bit worried that Reysel will continue their slide, as he puts it, as they started to fall away in the second half of last year, as we mentioned, having done all their hard work to get points on the board before that. And he's, I guess, Tokyo Fox is secretly hoping that, yeah, we'll all predict relegation for Reysel again, so his team can defy expectations yet again. But, well, yeah, when we come on to the transfers out, Sam, we'll get to the defence, and I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about all of those changes. But firstly, I did want to mention Hidekazu Otani, the club legend at Reysel. Certainly not the biggest name to leave a club in the off-season in J1, but one of the most important players in the history of Kashiwa Reysel. He's Chiba born and bred. He joined the youth setup at the club in 2000 and spent a full 20 years with the first team, making over 600 appearances in all competitions. So obviously that goes without saying, he's part of the fabric of Kashiwa Reysel, and obviously a huge personality at the club as well, so he'll be missed in that regard. But they're a very tight-knit club, obviously, and I'm sure if he's not already, he'll be part of the youth setup and the coaching setup there sooner rather than later. That is presuming he wants to continue a career in football. But yeah, what a career it was on the pitch for Kashiwa, of course. In Otani's area of the pitch, Doddy and Angelotti have moved on. But the major questions are about the defence, and Harry has asked us about the number of outs in this area of the park. He lists them off: Kamijima, Kitazume, Ominami, Somaya, and Takahashi, with only Diego coming in as a noticeable replacement. But there are a couple of other additions in defence that has you scratching your head, Sam.
First of all, with the outgoings, there's not a lot you can do if you cash it. If Marinos come in for Kamijima and if Frontale come in for Ominami, they're kind of things you've got to hold your hands up, you've got to let them go. I don't think Kamijima was quite as good as maybe everyone expected him to be. I think he showed a lot of promise in J2 and then don't think he quite crossed over into J1. It'd be interesting to see what they get out of him at Marinos, because there are definitely some raw elements to his game that can be worked on, but I think it was a little too error prone last season. And but Ominami played right wing back for large parts of last season. He's going to be quite a loss. With Kitazume also going, there's not many options to play that role. I think Toshima might be the most likely to play right wing back. They've also brought in Katayama from Shimizu, who is, I'll get into other Shimizu defenders coming in a bit and why you pick up defenders from the worst defence in the league, while also getting rid of maybe your most consistent or one of your most consistent in Takahashi going to Espoirs. At least Katayama is a bit like the Japanese John O'Shea in that he can play pretty much every position, so he's going to be quite useful. But yeah, I've been waiting. Yugo Tatsuta, last week Johnny, he said, is that I don't think there's more baffling signing than Horiya Ide to Vissel Kobe, and I will strongly raise him, Yugo Tatsuta, because they've picked up the worst defender from the worst defence last season, and I think he might start in this team, and it's just, I can't make any sense of it. I think Diego is the other defender they brought in. I think he's pretty solid. He can play left-sided centre-back. I think he'll be competent. I think he's more of a left-back, but I think it'll work pretty well. But if you're relying on Tatsuta, who I don't think has any positional sense, I don't think he has any technical ability, I just think he's one of the worst players I've seen consistently play in the J-League. And if you're relying on him, then I don't know what to tell you. It's not going to go well. And I just feel so sorry for Tayo Koga, who is going to be incredibly hard worked if he's up against him. It's one of those really baffling signings. I can't think of any logical reason why you'd be taking Tatsuta or why Shimizu were even starting him last season. So, yeah, ridiculous. But so there are massive issues, I think, defensively for Reysel. But the rest of the side, it looks quite good. There's so many good attacking options there. Keio Sento coming in should partner up with Koyamatsu to get that Tosu combination working again. Takamine, who I think might actually have to jump back into defence once they realise that Tatsuta is some sort of fraud that they thought they were getting something else. He can play centre back. He's played it well. I think he might drop in there. Yamada's a good player. So forward thinking, I think it's fine, but some of these defensive changes are absolutely baffling.
All right, do you want to weigh in there, in there as well, Johnny, or do you think Sam summed it up well enough?
Was it Sam has summed it up well, but I just wanted to kind of add in, like, you know, you can easily make an argument that Yokohama F. Marinos and Kawasaki Frontale, Kashiwa saw that they have people there who know way more about football than we do, but just from the outside, like, yeah, it's Kamijima, like, I had him, like, going back to Fukuoka or something rather than joining the champions. He just looks like he has the physicality, but whenever I saw him play against Gamba, I just had the feeling that if you put enough poor crosses in, he would just miscontrol one of them and give you a chance. And, you know, Ominami as well, you know, I was not a fan of him when he was at Jubilo. I think he has got better, but he's projecting as a starter for Kawasaki. I just don't see that. And, yeah, Sam said Takahashi, I thought once he got over his injury problems, I thought he was one of the better defenders. And why he's going to Shimizu like 6 months after they should have been signing him when they were still in J1, I don't know. And yeah, I'm not going to say anything more about Tatsuta. I think what I would maybe add about defenders, you know, Sam mentioned about Takamine moving back. There is a couple of promising youngsters. There's a guy, Hayato Tanaka, who'd be a second year pro, and he's got Japan youth caps, and he looks like he could be a kind of promising centre back. And they've got a player a bit like Takamine, can play kind of holding midfielder or centre back, Takumi Tsuchiya. Both of those guys started a few games in their first season last year, and I'm not expecting them to start, you know, like 20, 25 games or anything this year. But if there are defensive issues and they are going to go ahead with that three centre-back setup, then I think you might see those guys feature a little bit more. So maybe keep your eyes peeled for them.
Well, I mean, is there an argument that Nelsinho should switch back to a back four then? I mean, we know how bad Tatsuta is. So if he's going to leave him out there in a back three, I mean, okay, you can kind of hide him a little bit, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. Is there an argument for just playing your two best centre backs and maybe sacrificing a little bit of attacking? Attacking now from your flanks, I suppose, Sam. But yeah, I don't know if it's going to hamstring them that much, and maybe a change might be for the better.
Maybe, but they're still, you're looking at who's the best right back that they have. Kawaguchi's not great, and Katayama. So yeah, I wasn't really getting into the Shimizu team last season, so that's not a massive option. And then your other ones are kind of used to playing in that back three as well, and sometimes you get exposed when you go into that back four, and there's a lot more riding on those two centre backs. They might struggle more positionally and might need that extra comfort of the extra defenders around them. So sometimes when you've got really poor defenders, it's better to have a few more bodies there just to kind of cover. So I think Koga might be like maybe the central one of these three, and he might be covering the whoever it might be, left side and right side and centre back, and adding that sort of help there. So yeah, it doesn't look like a squad necessarily built to play that four at the back, especially when you've got left back would be Diego or Mitsumara, and both of them are probably quite good enough to play and should be commanding a starting role in that position. So, yeah, the squad has just been built for a back three. I think they have left themselves short of options if they were to make wanted to make any sort of tactical change.
No, fair enough then. All right, so we mentioned Keiya Sento. He's a really interesting addition to the squad, provided we get, the Tosu Sento rather than Nagoya one. I'm wondering about Mateus Savio, Johnny. Will the real Mateus Savio please stand up? Obviously so influential in the first couple of months of the season, but he did fall off quite a bit towards the end of the campaign. Again, I think you're probably stealing a note from your predicted lineups piece. I guess they're just hoping for a more consistent season from Savio. Not what can we expect from him, but they would just hope for him to be a little bit more consistent of the better variety.
Yeah, I think in his previous years with Kashiwa, he's had problems with injury, like staying fit. And then last year was probably the first year he actually managed to get a full season out of him. Unfortunately, despite Kashiwa, he was brilliant in the first half of the year. I think he was in our team of the half season, but then he wasn't even up for nomination in the final vote. So I think that tells you about the kind of dual-edged side to his season. And as you mentioned with Sento coming in, I think you mentioned Kota Yamada, who's a really, really good player coming up from Yamagata. And yeah, you've got Koyamatsu as well. There are options there that if Savio, if he doesn't quite, like if he continues to amble, he could find himself on the bench. I don't think he will. I think he is a good player. And I think he'll bounce back. And he's going to be vital, because if you look at the options ahead of him, like I like Douglas, but he's 35 now and he only played 10 games last season because of injury. And you get Yuki Muto, who they get good goals out of, but again, he's getting on a bit. And Hosoya is a bit of a, again, he's a bit of a double-edged sword, because he started the season well, like Savio did last year, and then fell away. But if he starts the season well again, like this year, he's probably a bit like we said, Atsuki Ito last night. He's one of the most likely to get snapped up by a European side. So I think, I'm happy with it. Their attacking options, similar to Niigata, like the creative players. There's plenty of talents there, like Savio, just that kind of centre forward. Do they have enough consistent goals? And if consistent goals do come from there, is that player then going to leave?
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, so I know Douglas is one of your favourites, Sam, but he's not your one to watch.
No, it's the other one, Hosoya. I think it's a really interesting season for him because, as Johnny said, they're really good start of the season, didn't necessarily keep it up. But 8 goals last year is a pretty decent return for your first full season really as a starter, and I think he filled the void that Douglas's injury left pretty well, especially while both were out, and then Muto came back from his injury and added to that. But yeah, he really needs to step up a little bit more this season. I think if Ray Sol to have a similar season to last year and be up in the upper reaches of the league. So yeah, it's what have you got for an encore, Mal? And hopefully, he can build on that, and he's probably can see himself on the fringes of maybe a national team call. If Machino is getting international call-ups, then Hosoya will think maybe one more good season and he might be on that brink as well, plus a potential move to Europe. So I think it's a really interesting season for him, and hopefully he can step up and maybe get double figures or a little bit higher than that this year.
Yeah, Johnny, I'd like to get your thoughts on Hosoya as well. What sort of a ceiling do you think he has for Raisol? I mean, could he develop into as ISA Wade did, into a pure finisher? And that might be the thing he really needs to add to his game to attract the European scouts, who I'm sure are already well aware of him. But they might want to see him develop a little bit more in key areas before making an approach. But he kind of does have the profile of the young Japanese striker who might be primed to develop. And yeah, this might we don't want to put the dampener on the Raisol fan season before it's even begun. But yeah, this, if he does develop as I guess we hope he will, then yeah, this might be their last opportunity to see him in Raisol yellow.
I think it's really interesting you mentioned that Ayase Ueda, because I remember when he first turned pro from university, he was often criticised that if he had to think about it, he wouldn't bury his chances. And then
yes, by me.
I think we all probably did that as well, to be fair. But you saw how quickly, like once he got up to speed and working with professionals every day, he really became a clinical finisher. And similarly, I think both myself and Sam, we were guilty of kind of labelling Hosoya as, when he first came into the team, like two seasons ago, he didn't really offer a whole lot in terms of like clinicalness in front of goal. He didn't look too confident in front of goal. But then at the start of last season, he was like a completely different player. It's like he knew, I belong at this level. I can score goals here. I can cause defenders problems. And I think, that you mentioned Machino went to the World Cup. Hosoya's had a bit of time off, which I think will do him good after like all these years of football with COVID cramming the seasons together. So if he's maybe kind of bulked up, put on a few pounds of muscle over the winter, thought about his game a bit more, gets back into pre-season training, he's a bit sharper. He's got the target. Now he scored 8 goals last season. Look for double digits this year. Look for international call-ups. He's got the bit between his teeth. I think, yeah, there's quite a high ceiling for him, and he's definitely someone international scouts would be interested in. If you're watching the league looking for young players who are going to go far in the game, I think Mal Hosoya is definitely someone to take a look at.
Absolutely, yeah, very much one to watch. So good call, Sam. And Johnny, obviously I know ahead of time who your one to watch is, and you mentioned him briefly before, so tell us more about Kota Yamada, because you've got him in your predicted 11, so coming into the club, and you think he's gonna be able to make an impact straight away.
Yeah, so I think we're just talking about Hosoya there. He's going to need someone to supply him the ammunition. I think Yamada can be that player. He's previously was at Yokohama F. Marinos, and then he's worked with Peter Klimovsky the last two seasons at Yamagata. I think kind of in terms of output, his first season was slightly better, but I almost felt like the second year, I think he had injury problems at the start of the season, had a few sub appearances. I felt like when I watched him, he was more of a complete player last year. And I think those, you know, those 2 years under Klimovsky, with not huge amounts of pressure, but just enough, you know, you have to get in the playoffs when you're at Yamagata. That's the kind of goal. You know, whenever I watched him in J2, I said, you know, he's one of these players, like, he's better than there's J1 players he's better than. And it's interesting, I mentioned like Taiki Hirato last week, and he was at Kashima, then he was down to J2, but his real level is somewhere in the middle, whereas I think, you know, Yamada, you can argue he's not quite ready to play every week for Marinos, but he's far too good to be playing in J2, and then a team that finished 7th in J1 last year like Kashima is at just his level. I think I mentioned in my predicted lineups blog about I think 2nd in J2 for amount of through balls. So, you know, he's a very direct player, and if you have him and Matias Savio cooking, then they're definitely going to be supplying chances for whoever's playing up front. It's just a matter of them taking it. But yeah, Yamada, Kiyasento has been mentioned, Savio, Koyamatsu, plenty of talent in that area for sure at Kashiwa.
Brilliant stuff. All right, then. So, yeah, we'll wrap it up. Chris's question, might they be dark horses again? Quite a few ins and outs, but perhaps that won't change things too much. And, yeah, we wonder, I suppose, if Nelsinho has still got the magic. Of course, former J1 champion with Kashiwa, having taken them up as J2 champions the season before. And this is his 5th season now of his 2nd stint in charge at Hitachi Dai. So, well, Sam, yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they'll be a second in match day 24 like they were in 2022. But, yeah, who's to know? This is obviously the craziest league in the world. But, yeah, what kind of expectations do you have in general terms, and what sort of a rough area do you have them in your rough J-Pred at the moment?
Yeah, I've been burned by Kashiwa a few times, so I don't want to necessarily go too low or too high with them at all. I've got them in roughly mid-table. I think there are so many good options in terms of attacking positions and in midfield that I think they'll do quite well, but there are too many issues for me at the back with the young goalkeeper that's, yes, susceptible to conceding a fair few goals, and the defensive issues that I've mentioned, especially with Patster. And I think that stops them really getting to that higher ceiling and getting into the ACL. So I think I've got them 10th in my prediction at the moment, which is a bit too close to the 7th that Johnny was mentioning earlier. So maybe I do need to get away and back to, was it 14th, 7th, 14th or something like that. So maybe I should go 14th, but no, mid-table for me. I think they'll be fairly, very comfortable. I don't see them in terms of relegation trouble at this time. But yeah, I think defensively it really stops them pushing too much higher. Johnny, any difference from that?
I mean, hypocrite warning, I had them quite close to 7th again, but I think that they're not going to challenge for the ACL, and with only the bottom team going down, I see there's no way they're going to be 18th. But I think they'll be slightly lower than they were last season, not significantly so, and as I think Sam's done well to point out the defensive issues, I think they'll be quite unbalanced. It would be great to watch them against Sapporo. I think there are a lot of goals in that game. But, yeah, a comfortable season in mid-table for Kashiwa for me. What about you, Ben? You can have the final words.
Yeah, again, I could look very, very silly, and that would not be the first time. Yeah, I would expect them to slide a little, maybe into the upper half of the bottom half of the table, if you like. So, yeah, I guess between maybe 10th and possibly as low as 13th, but I think the defense is going to take a lot of sorting, and that will gray Nelsinho's hair even further, if that's possible. But I don't think they'll be in any danger of relegation, but it might be slightly less comfortable than it was last year. But again, they proved us all wrong last year. Well, everyone except Johnny. let's see what we will get from Kashiwa Reysol in 2023. All right, though, three more teams previewed then. That means we're halfway through the league, listeners, if you're keeping score at home. On next week's episode, Nagoya, Hiroshima, Fukuoka, and Tosu will be up for discussion and for previewing. So I guess, well, patrons, if you're if you've got questions on those, you can send them in straight away. And we already got one in today from Craig, so that was absolutely terrific. So we're already starting our prep for next week's episode. And well, listeners, we can let you in on the little secret already. Yes, Johnny will be joining us again for next week's episode. So we're obviously Sam and I very much looking forward to speaking to Johnny again. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. Sam, I'll say goodbye to you first on this occasion then. Thanks for splitting the recording over two nights, and thoroughly enjoyed all of our previews on these two episodes, and look forward to rolling on next week.
No problem. I'm glad you're feeling better now. I'm recording on this Tuesday night, and looking forward to next week, especially to see how far me and Grant Fletcher are away in our opinions on Nagoya. But yeah, otherwise, Avispa are very interesting. I might make some Avispa supporters a little upset with the way I think their season's going to go. It's a slight spoiler, but yeah, otherwise, Tosu and Hiroshima especially, really exciting teams. So I look forward to getting into it with both of you next week.
Outstanding stuff. All right, Johnny. Well, thanks for joining us again. And can't wait to pick it up again with those four clubs next week.
Yes, again, it's always going to be exciting. It'll be my third week in a row on the pod, so hopefully I can keep my consistent levels going. I questioned a few players tonight if they could do it, so hopefully I can do it as well. And thanks again to everyone for questions and feedback and everything. And I'll speak to you guys next week. Thank you.
Terrific stuff. All right. Thanks, Johnny. And thanks for pointing that out. A big thanks to Harry, Kai, Daniel, Chris, Graham Freche, Kevin and Tokyo Fox for their questions for the three clubs on this episode. And thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. Listeners, we'd also like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be previewing four more teams on next week's episode. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast.